you are paying attention, which I'm sure you were. We all made aspirations to be Buddha. And Buddhahood. Sound system working okay? It's not on. Oh, you turned it off. It was on, yeah. Yeah, good. Okay. So, what does it mean to be Buddha? It means to be awake. Buddha means awake, awake person. So, what are we awake to? We like to say sometimes we're awake to things as they are, but how are things? So today's talk, meditation, is on, in Sanskrit, called Pratityasamutpada, which means interdependence. The Buddha woke up to the reality of interdependence. Sometimes we hear it translated as dependent, co-arising. I've made up a new translation just for today. Interdependent cooperation. So when the mic sound system wasn't operating properly, so both Dana and Brian cooperated on, and other people cooperated on getting the sound system going. They arose, and then we are able to manifest things. So that's interdependent co-arising. I mention independent because the whole task is to how to work with others without losing ourselves. Isn't that it? We want to maintain our freedom and independence, but at the same time feel completely connected and maybe even embraced by others. So one way of looking at Buddhahood is this experience of being completely free and completely embraced at the same time. Usually those two things are separated, right? We're feeling trapped or smothered. So then we back up a little bit. Then we feel lonely and isolated. So we come a little, edge a little closer. And this movement of approach and avoidance is suffering, where we're always, without wisdom, moving closer because we're feeling too cold, and then when we get too hot, we're moving away unconsciously. When the process is understood, then we're Buddha, we're awake. So it isn't that we don't move between closeness and moving away, is that we understand when we're getting close to someone or close to something, we're getting close. And then when we back up, we're backing up. And when we understand this, then there's a sense of balance and even delight. So I'm calling it interdependent cooperation. That sounds nice, right? Sometimes when people talk about interdependence, they talk about it as parts fitting together. And sometimes we talk in that kind of physical way, how things connect. But that is just for the purpose of analysis only. It really feels like we're being totally embraced by the world and by others, and we're totally free at the same time. There's total intimacy and total space. Total intimacy results in bliss, and the total space is the wisdom mind. So in our tradition, we really emphasize interdependent bliss and wisdom. In some traditions, it's different, but in our tradition, the wisdom, the knowledge aspect, the spaciousness aspect is the feminine pole, and the bliss and skillful means aspect is the male pole of reality. That's why when we recite the Heart Sutra, we're reciting to the Arya Bhagavati, and one representation of her is at the end. Do you remember seeing that? She's holding up a Dorje here in that scripture here. Yeah. So the wisdom mind, the spacious mind, is seen as the feminine pole, and the bliss aspect is seen as the male pole in our Tantra approach. But in any case, it's always going to be this interdependent cooperation, and the experience we have that of that. So that's easy, right? So Buddha or Buddhahood means, too, that we've developed all the powers necessary to help others. So sometimes when we say Buddhahood, I hate to say it, it sounds like Robin Hood, but it's a little bit similar that we've also activated the compassion to help others. This really takes a lot of wisdom and skillful means, because in a sense, it's fairly easy to kind of wake up on our own. I'm sure everyone in this room has had that experience where they're feeling totally connected and calm and clear, and maybe even thinking, this is it. But then you're called upon to work with someone, or someone reminds you that you haven't fed the cats in the morning, and you know, suddenly that experience can disappear very quickly. So there's more than just individual liberation. The first step, though, is individual liberation, so that we can develop clarity and awareness, that we wake up to this interdependent world. But full interdependence cooperation means that we also have to develop the skillful way to work with our society, work with each other, work with others, get along with our partners, get along with our pets, everybody, because just knowing things isn't enough. It is really irritating when we know what to do, or we know how things are, and the other people just won't go along. Isn't that annoying? You know. So the purpose of the temple here is not only to help us gain an individual liberation where we see the truth and wake up individually, but how to wake up in a cooperative, interrelated way. So we feel supported by others, by our community, and we're willing to work with others. We're willing to be annoyed by others. We're willing to be inconvenienced by others. Maybe we're even willing to be attacked by others and not respond with vengeance. It all sounds difficult, but it's actually easier than the difficult world, which is called samsara. Samsara means the addictive cycle of going around and around, doing the same thing, expecting it to get better, but it just gets worse. So that's why students here have heard me said, well, it's easy. Yeah, it is easier than the world of suffering. But it does still take work. It does take effort. It does take a lot of inspiration. It does take a lot of twists and turns. So the programs in the temple here, the teachings here, are to support us so that we keep going. My teacher didn't praise very much. My transmission teacher, Geshe Rudron, I think in 12 or 13 years, about the 8th or 9th, maybe 10th year, he said, I'm glad you're still doing this. I'm glad you kept going. Because that is mainly what teachers are helping us to do, is giving correct direction, but then just encouraging us. So for all the people that have kept going and are still here, I want to thank you for keeping going, you know, showing up. This week is a big week for us because tomorrow night Gobje Jada Rinpoche will be here, and along with Geshe Tashi, and we'll have a talk about Kala Chakra, which is the big tantra about how to become realized and create enlightened community. We'll have some ceremony, but mostly it'll be a talk with question and answer period also. So if you do show up with a question, okay? So, but I will probably appoint somebody before then as at least one person who will ask the first question, you know, the shill. try to think of a question that comes out of your actual practice, something that you're actually working with. So questions probably on either extreme would be not to, you know, questions not to ask, like, Rinpoche, how do you like America so far? Or, he's been here, he's politically astute, he reads the newspaper, so he's, or maybe another, you know, you don't have to ask, like, what's the, you know, tantrika idea of emptiness or something, you know. Keep it with your own personal practice. That's what teachers like the best. If people are going to be here tomorrow night, we'll definitely have time for questions and answers. Who's thinking they'll be here tomorrow night? Yeah? Okay, good. So, don't wait for the question to come up during the talk, right? You know, think about now, like, you know, I always think when asking teachers questions, like, if you had one question to ask, you know, if you, like in the New Yorker cartoons where a person, like, hikes up the mountain and the yogi's sitting there. you know, what's the one question you'd ask? You actually generally, in a monastery setting, lots of times you do only get one question, to tell you the truth, you know. So when I have interviews with people, we generally have, you know, a long time, but you wouldn't get that in a monastery or even a regular interview with a teacher. You'd get your one question, and the teacher would respond, and you'd dialogue about that, and then you'd generally be wrung out. And you might not see the teacher again for a couple of years. So that actually helps in a way. We really put energy into what's really important to us. And then when we dialogue or receive some reply, then it really means something. So generally that's a good way to think about it. So if you have questions or comments for Rinpoche tomorrow, then come from that place. That makes sense, right? That also applies to me too. You know, if you come to Darshan interview, then yeah, come. You know, what do you bring? What's the burning desire? Right, that's important. So I'm going to talk a little bit more, warning, and then we'll have some time for discussion in like 5 minutes. So you have 5 minutes? Is that okay? It's fun to know some Tibetan words. So the Tibetan for Pratityasamutpada, which is the Sanskrit for interdependence, is tendril, like that, tendril. So when I was living at the monastery, you would take one word and you would drill into it. So my preceptor at the monastery gave me like two words, Nejung and tendril. Nejung means definite emergence. So a definite emergence where you really decide you want to wake up. Sometimes we call it taking refuge, but it's like you really want to wake up. You really want to be free. So one way they do it at the monastery is they say, well, what's your understanding of Nejung, emergence? And I'd go, Nejung is like this. And they go, no, you didn't pronounce it right. It's Nejung. And then I say, okay, Nejung. And then they go, no, Nejung. So what was the reason for that? One, probably teaching Tibetan, but also by the time you said what it was, you had to really mean it. Okay, it wasn't like, well, I don't know. I think, you know, definite emergence means, you know, finding who you are. And, you know. No, I mean, you really had to, you know, just, you had to lay yourself on the line, right? You had to jump. So one of the persons with Rinpoche will be Geshe Tashi, you know, a very accomplished master. And he has a very strong voice, so you know that if he doesn't need translating or ask him a question, he's going to have a definite, right, answer, right? So that's traditional kind of training. So in our tradition, also, if you don't know something, you also make a mistake in a big way too. You don't try to hide your mistake. You know, if you have an idiotic answer, you don't, even if you know it's wrong, you're just going to come out and say it. You know, so if you're doing a debate with someone and they go, what's 2 + 2? And you go, 5! You know, you don't, you know it's wrong, but you put it out there, okay? So, the reason I'm telling this way is because interdependence means that also, as we say in Dzogchen, means presence. Like you show up. You can't become interdependent. You can't cooperate with somebody. You can't notice how you both are free and connected if you're holding back a little bit. So in our practice, in Tantra practice particularly, like when we don't know, we're putting ourselves out there. It's very difficult because in our European American system, the tendency, if you don't know anything, you don't raise your hand, right? You know, school. You know, there are these kids waving wildly, you know, but if we don't know, we're just kind of sitting there. But in our Tantra practice, it'd be like we're, you know, 11 years old, and they're asking, like, what's the capital of Italy? And we're waving our hand, you know, and we go, Chicago, you know. So we're willing to put ourselves out there like that. So the energy of willing to show up is more important in many ways than the correct information. Because the energy of putting yourself out there means that you're willing to connect and be seen. And that is definitely, you know, you're definitely emerging, you're coming out, and that which is Nejung, and then Tendril is you're willing to connect, interconnect, right? You're willing to connect. In the monastery, and my teacher knew that I have this thing from growing up that it's always good to know someone's name when you say hello. So, you know, what my teacher would make me do is like say hello to people and get their names wrong. You know, because sometimes we hold back, we don't know someone's name in a function or a ceremony or something, then you're kind of like hoping they volunteer at first, you know, hoping they'll volunteer. But in our tradition, we take the first step. Trungpa Rinpoche called, you know, jumping the gun. So we're willing to just kind of take the first step. See, we're willing to make a mistake, and then on top of that, we're willing to take the first step. So that's also Nejung and Tendril. You know, you show up, and you're willing to take the first step. It's difficult to do because, of course, it brings out our awkwardness. But it also brings out our aliveness. So when asking questions, it's really interesting if we just kind of leap and say the first thing that comes out of our mouth. The funny thing, I was talking to somebody last week who was on the radio, a radio show, and the interviewer, you know, said, "Hi, my name is so-and-so." And then on show, he asked, "What's your name?" you know, on the show. And she said the person who asked her the name, right? So it's like, "Hi, I'm Tom." And she said, "Hi, I'm Tom." And The neat part, and then it was funny. They both laughed. You know, the neat part about that is there was some kind of real merging there, right? There was something happened there. It wasn't just nervousness, you know, where that interdependence was so profound that you know, we weren't sure like who we were and who they were. Of course. That can have problems, but we have to have that ability to do that. Funny examples are just when you're sitting next to somebody, maybe at a theater or something like that, and their stomach gurgles, and you don't know whether it's them or you. But, you know? Because it's happened before. You've been in a little trance state because of movie. You have to go into a little trance state, right? So that sound and the kind of gurgling has happened before you've divided the world into self and other, before you separated. So there's this like, was that you or me? You know, because if you're sitting next to your partner, you might say, "Stop it," or "What's wrong with you?" But it's interesting, was that you or me? So another aspect of Tendril is that place where we're, well, not sure, is that you or me? That's a good place to start to reach community and harmony, to get along with each other. So we know we're having a real discussion about things instead of a fight when we're going, you know, I'm not sure. You know, I don't know. Is that you or me? You know, we start to open the world, and we see the interdependent world. We haven't divided it into, well, that's you, and that's your problem and issues. You need to go to therapy. I'm okay, or I'm going to therapy, but you need, you know. So we're willing to kind of go, I don't know, you know, is that you or me? Let's take a look. So that open spaciousness is the wisdom mind. And the bliss aspect is that we can actually come to connection and joy through waking up. So I'm going to stop here. We have time for a few questions, comments, or complaints. It's okay. So. Yes, Michael.
Is it more important for us modern Americans to act like we are traditional Tibetans, or is it more important to be ourselves and be authentic if we want to wake up?
Don't be yourself and don't be a Tibetan.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It seems like a concept that you haven't specifically talked about that underlines all this is trust. That you have to trust that we're really all alive. That we're all trying to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Trust, yeah. You know, if you don't believe that, then you're not
going to
trust the other person as just being a person as opposed to,
you know,
the other.
I don't know if everyone can hear about the question about trust or comment about trust. In some ways, it's easier, of course, if you trust, you're willing to be open and connect. So many of the practices in Dharma are about extending the ability to trust and creating emotional connection and devotion, things like that, you know, everything we feel for our child or for a pet we loved or our partner from time to time, that kind of thing. So, but there are some people that have a hard time trusting, right? And so then we have to investigate deeply. We should be doing both, actually. But if we're not trusting, then we don't want to be stuck in kind of a lukewarm agnosticism, so to speak. If you don't trust, then you have to investigate so that you know exactly what's going on. So actually, in our practice, we want the two to work together. So really doing Tantra, we want to like be totally open-hearted, going, everyone's wonderful and life is good and business is terrific. And then at the same time go, I don't trust anybody, but I'm going to investigate. So the real thing is to try to do both at the same time. Then we come to both, you know, emotional openness and then also intellectual certainty and openness. So like I use the example sometimes of the trust side might be, I'm fond of jewelry, so let's say I come in and the Midway House or something here, and I look at my ring and go, okay, the diamonds are there, you know. But then in 5 minutes, I notice, I look down again and one's missing. A trust thing might be like, well, I know it's here, I'll find it sometime, or I'll get home and Sabrina won't see it. So, but she would. But the other method is to really look for it right then. And I've mentioned a couple of times that if you really want to find something that's been lost, you create a grid, like maybe on the floor someplace, and you maybe separate things down into like 1-inch little squares, and then you look in each little square, and if you don't find the diamond, then you move to the next square and you move to the next level. That's real investigation, right? The important part, which we do in Dharma, which others don't do so much, is that if you've determined, you've looked really deeply, and something's not there, then you don't go back to it. This is really the way of the pandita and really the scholar, which is really important too. So that if you think, well, I'm looking for the diamond, if I don't, you know, if it wasn't there, you tape it over and you don't go back. And if you keep moving very, very slowly and systematically, you'll find it. And if you don't find it, then guess what? It wasn't lost, and you only thought you were missing the diamond. So those are two ways. One way is like complete open-hearted trust or letting go. I don't need a diamond anyways, just a rock, so stupid, you know. Or you really systematically look for it and you either find it or you don't. That makes sense, right? Yeah. So just to finish, like, I have very strong devotion to my teachers and to Dharma, but I do not have any doubt. And that's why, even though maybe I'm not as good a person, I'm always working on my personality. I don't have the doubt, you see. I'm not going back and looking for something that isn't there. And that means my mental state is very calm. I'm not bouncing around where I'm thinking, well, maybe there is and maybe there isn't, you see. That takes so much energy, ladies and gentlemen, where you're always kind of, well, maybe I'm good, maybe I'm not, you know. Maybe the world's going to end, maybe it's not, you know. That kind of doubt, the wavering, is exhausting, right? Just exhausting, you know. So when you combine that with trust, then there's a lot of energy liberated. There was one more question, someone.
When you're talking about that, when you can't find something in the there, so therefore, using the analogy, you could use that in your thought process. Mm-hmm. If you think a lot, then there's a lot of thought.
Yeah.
Well, that's one way, and that is equal to you.
Right, right.
Right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. The basic metaphor in Dharma is like, we think we have something that we don't actually need. Mm-hmm. We think we have a solid, separate self that somehow we've also lost, you know. But actually we don't need it because we have an interconnected, very huge self. So we've never lost it in the first place. The diamond's never been lost. Yeah. Brian, yeah.
Of practice, not taking myself too seriously. actually sounds not working. And I started imploding, I started going, oh, oh, oh. And then offers to help. She's calling 111, and I'm going, yeah, 211, 211. And she's, and I'm like imploding by it. That's what she's saying. So it's what you were talking about made a lot of sense to me. Is if I'm imploding, she's pointing out 111 and other numbers, and I was looking at 211, and when I let her, then all of a sudden everything works right.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, I just don't trust her, like getting out of my own way, not in the speech kind of a thing of, no, this is all right, you know, and it's got to be that microphone. But anyway, I just saw that clearly when she was going 111. I'm going, yeah, 211. And in my way, it's the same. I'm seeing what she's saying. Mm-hmm.
We're letting go of fixation. Yeah. So the model at the temple here, the model in Dharma is to always have at least, you know, two people responsible for something. You know, always have that kind of approach. It kind of forces people to work with each other, of course. So sometimes, the lama, meaning me, or a teacher will pair you with someone that you're having trouble with. That's not, you know, pardon me? It's funny. So, yeah, that's, you know, that's like open secret. So, okay. But actually, then it's okay. It's really nice to have, you know, someone helping you out, you know? It's really nice to have another, you know, two or three people, really, not just one other person, you know, as support, right? Ego would like to do everything, you know, itself. I'll just run it. Just leave me alone. I'll do it myself because only I know how to do it right. That's the ego, right? We may be right, technically, but it is really is true. You can either be happy or you can be right. So, by learning to get support, generally we're going to end up with a better situation, and we'll learn interdependence and be Buddhists. So that's the program here. Is we learn how to wake up. By being present with ourselves and others, you know? And it's easy. One more hand. Well, the Buddha never said it was easy, right? On a basic level, we try to, you know, find out what people's real needs are. So, as human beings, we all don't want suffering, and we want happiness. And generally, to begin with, we want safety. Okay. So, when in a very difficult situation with someone, it's always going to be probably first about safety. Right. So I've either had good luck or bad luck that both times when I was in meditation, people came into the Dharma hall where I was with guns. One time in L.A., which makes perfect sense. and I like L.A., sorry, but, you know. And the other time in a retreat outside of Colorado. And what was interesting about it was like we all just kept sitting there, you know. So, you know, I wasn't, in both times I was leading a group, and somehow we just generated some safety. Because I know if somebody had tried to jump up and, you know, confront and stuff like that. I'm not saying that would always work. You know, it's not like strategy, but I'm just saying, like, the number one thing that most people who are totally other is that people are scared. So you have to establish safety first. And then you totally have to, second is like, well, what, you know, how much space do they need? So if someone really wants to get out, you let them out. One time when I was working at Sutter Center for Psychiatry, well, there are like three locked doors. There's the outer locked door, the locked door to the unit, and then there's another unit locked door. And there was a guy that actually, like, you know, had psychotic break, right? And he was a big guy. I don't know if anybody's ever been, had to, like, put someone in restraints or something. You don't want to do it. If they don't want to go, guess what? So we just opened up all the doors. You know, we're just like, open up all the doors. And he just ran out. And then he was a big guy, and he tired out after about 100 yards. Whereas if we tried to stop him, let's see. So what I'm trying to avoid is like picking the worst person we know in the world or current political figures we don't like, and then what would we do? But, you know, make it very practical. Like when we're dealing with a really difficult situation, we always want to think safety and freedom. Is someone safe? And then are they feeling that, you know, they can move? And then you'll also make a smarter move too, right? Yeah. And that goes for you too. We always want to establish our safety first, and then how can we move? Yeah. All right, last question.
So, continuing along with that safety thing, you know, everybody wants to be happy and everyone wants to be safe. Mm-hmm. And your example of the person going down the door, when is there a boundary between what this person believes is, you know, would make them happy or be safe?
Yeah.
Would it be better to restrain him if it meant no one would get hurt, or letting him run down the hallway and maybe somebody does get hurt, maybe he's in the hallway and he maybe attacks someone?
Same thing. What's the safest thing? Well, certainly, yeah, that's it. You just, that's the whole thing. That's interdependent. It depends upon the situation. So we need a wisdom mind, like, well, and what's the safest thing? What's going to allow the most freedom for both individuals? It might mean you run away. Yeah, actually, you know, the smartest thing to do is, that's why there are many human beings, is because we ran away. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we should run away. Yeah, so actually avoidance is really sometimes, you know, smart too. Yeah, so what's going to be...
Yeah.
Then of course there's, you know, love and connection, you know, so like that. So the safety, you have your child, there has to be safety, there has to be some level of freedom, and then there's that love and connection. Yeah, you know, like that. That's why we need wisdom, wisdom mind, yeah. Should we take a little stretch and then do a short meditation? Would that be helpful for people? Mm-hmm. Like 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes? How about five? Okay. We'll take 5 minutes, and you can talk, and then just stretch, and then we'll do like short meditation. Some people may be here for the first time, and perhaps one of the practice leaders went over meditation, but I want to emphasize that it's okay to move a little. That's important, you know. Maybe there are two reasons that I'm doing this kind of practice. I met wonderful human beings, Buddhas, really. And also, I have really bad knees, so I'm always in some pain, and I'd probably be doing some form of Zen practice or something else, because you can't move. But I can move. So I ended up here. So, you know, just our short period, we want to be comfortable, right? That's important. Yeah.